Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Citizens of Earth and all beings, both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Danny Roth, and this is Who Won the Week, Sci-Fi Wire's podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in geek. I am joined this week by my co-hosts and friends, the Blurred Girl, Kara Mahorn, and Sci-Fi Wire's own editor-in-chief, Adam Swiderski.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Good morning.
Every time I do that, I think, this is the time that it's going to feel natural.
Yeah.
And it never does.
And the fanfare is going to go off. Da, 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 da. Nope.
It's just that, like, I do the energy up. Yay.
I know.
And then.
Well, it's my mission in life to completely undercut that at every turn.
But, you know, I am in a very comfortable pose. Now that we're in a studio, I can be very relaxed. I can move the mic as such. Not that anyone can see this, but I am.
Yeah, it's like
I'm very comfortable.
We've been upgraded. We have been upgraded.
It's true.
This is why we sound so much better.
Yeah, if you notice that, then yes, there's a reason. Anyway, all kinds of stuff happening this week. What a week. Some shows got canceled. Some people said some things about some movies that still aren't out yet.
Which is the same thing that happens every day.
Yep. And How to Train Your Dragon came out.
Yeah.
Yep.
Black Panther came out also a year ago.
Oh, yes, it did.
So we'll talk about that. It's influence, its reach, if you will. But first, we do a thing at the top of every show where we talk about things that we're personally sort of geeking out about, things that just we like, us and us alone.
Us and us alone. Nobody else likes them but us.
Karima, what were you sort of lonely in the corner thinking about this week?
Why do I have to be lonely? Why can't I just be, why can't I think in a group of people? Two things. I realized actually yesterday that it was Dwayne McDuffie's birthday was yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And Dwayne McDuffie, for those of you who don't know, is the creator of Milestone Comics back in the day. It became an imprint of DC Comics. And he created a lot of characters like Icon, Rocket, Static, who went on to have his own run of Static Shock. And it's really funny because I was watching Young Justice, as one does, Young Justice Outsiders, and it hit me that a lot of his characters made it into made it into Young Justice Outsiders. So it's sort of like he's still being paid homage to. And honestly, some of my favorite animated movies from DC, he produced, like Doom and things like that. So I was kind of geeking out about that. And I was also really fascinated by an interview I got to do this week. And it's funny because the guys, it was about manga, actually. And it's a black mangaka who's like a manga artist. For those of you who don't know, a mangaka is basically the term for the person that writes and draws manga. And he goes by White Manga, but that's because white is in his name. And I'm trying not to butcher his name, but it's Oguguo White is his name. And he actually started a shonen in this country. He didn't do it by himself. He co-created it. It's called Saturday AM. And a lot of people just know about Noir Caesar, but he actually helped start Saturday AM, which came out before it. And it's got, the artwork is incredible. It's so interesting to me, the people on the indie scene who are creating comics and manga and things like this. Like, you can literally go to the site right now and read like 10 different issues for free. You can subscribe for like $2 a month and get 7 or 8 different stories and by tons of people that you've never heard of with really creative, really interesting storylines. And it's one of those things, Adam, we've talked before about, like, can we just please find some new stories and new creators and stop beating up the same old ones? This was like such a perfect example of that. And so I now have a whole bunch of stuff on my iPad that I now have to read because it was just fascinating. So those things I'm geeking out about.
Cool. Wait, where did you find that? Where is that? And how did you get that recommended to you?
Actually, I met the Saturday AM team at like Wizard World last year. It was really weird. And I started following White Manga. And what was really funny about him is, oh, on top of everything else, he's got a huge, huge YouTube channel. We'll get to that later. But YouTube famous, because what he does is he teaches tutorials about how to draw and like how to like work color and light into your art and stuff. So I actually had been following on YouTube, didn't realize Saturday AM was the thing he was doing, and met him. And it was just kind of going back and forth until we could get the interview going.
Cool.
Really, really interesting.
But if I look up White Manga, I'll find it.
Yep. W-H-Y-T Manga.
See, I'm glad I asked that question otherwise.
Yes. You wouldn't have known because that's how he spells his middle name. And he's actually Nigerian. Please read the interview this week because he's a fascinating person. And his whole concept of creating things in a digital space, he doesn't have these limitations of, well, I can't do that because I don't know how. He's totally self-taught. He did go to school for art. It's just a fascinating story. So yeah, check him out.
Adam?
Yes.
Lonely in the corner. What were you up to?
Oh, so lonely. this week I geeked out about weeping and holding myself. No.
Wow, we had a very similar week.
Yeah, no, I'm going to continue my long-standing tradition that I started last week of conflating the music and geek worlds. This one has a little stronger of a connection in that I saw in concert the band Metric.
Oh, wow.
This week, who, as everyone knows, provided the song Black Sheep for The Clash at Demon Head from Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Okay.
Sung by Brie Larson on the actual soundtrack. And they did perform that song, so that was kind of cool to see the actual original version of that performed. Great, great show. Anyone who's been listening to this knows that I'm kind of a music obsessive as well, so that was really great. And did lead me to revisit that film a little bit. I continue to hold my opinion that it has some really, really cool scenes, but I don't know about it as a whole. So anyway, The Clash of Demon Head, revisiting Brie Larson's performance of the song Black Sheep, as inspired by seeing the band Metric perform it on Monday night.
Nice. Do they play Combat Baby?
Yes, they did.
It's my favorite song.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's actually maybe my top 10 favorite songs, period.
It was great. They played for two full hours, which is not a common thing for a band of their stature.
Sure.
Nobody plays that length anymore?
No. Usually get like an hour and a half-ish.
Oh, I'm wow. Cool. I'm cool with that, honestly. Thing, 2 hours,
like,
I'm ready
You play
for
like
that.
An arena show. You know, I saw Interpol a couple weeks ago or last weekend, and they played 2 hours.
Okay.
So the bigger bands that play these big arena shows, but at your level of indie rock type stuff, mid-sized venues, most bands play an hour and a half. So, you know, it got to be 11 and we're sitting there thinking like, oh, they should be wrapping up soon. And then they kept going. It was awesome. but yeah, it was a really, really great show. Emily Haynes never stops moving. She must have incredible cardiovascular fitness.
Wow.
Terrific front person for a band. And again, caused me to revisit Scott Pilgrim very briefly and see a very young Brie Larson as we gear up for her playing Captain Marvel. In her performance as Envy Adams.
Yep. No controversy there. All good news.
Oh, and before I forget, because I did phonetically spell out his name, his full name is Odunze White Oguguo.
Cool.
But you will not find all that online. You'll just find White Manga, W-H-Y-T Manga.
And cool. Now,
I'm glad you repped the full name.
Sorry.
No, it's cool.
Because I can't say when people butcher my name, so I wanted to go back and fix that.
Thanks, Karama.
Whoa.
Anyway,
that's the end of that segment.
Yeah, no, it's not. I was gonna say, and now for the piece de resistance.
Whoa,
Danny.
That's French for in a corner with Danny.
Danny. Nobody wants to put this baby in a corner.
What won your week?
What did win my week? Well, you know, I don't know if you've heard this thing. There's these two shows. They're set in space. Some people seem to think you can only like one of them. I'm of the opinion you can like both. One of them is called The Orville. The other one is called Star Trek Discovery. It's part of a little-known franchise that's been around for a couple of years. They both had episodes on last night. Both outstanding. Unbelievably good. I find, for me personally, I keep watching The Orville this season, and for me, a lot of the episodes have not quite hit what I want, personally, which doesn't make the show bad, by the way. But last night's episode gave me some Borg vibes. And that, I mean, for a show that is really designed to be kind of a love letter to that era of Star Trek a little bit, was such a good feeling. So that was incredible. Even if you haven't been watching The Orville at all this season, it's a two-parter to it. Ends on a cliffhanger and everything. It's like some straight up best of both worlds type of stuff.
So originally, though, you were saying that The Orville is lifting wholesale, basically, from The Next Generation. Do you still feel, are they finding their footing as an individual show at all? Or?
It really varies week to week. You're talking about it. There was a very specific episode, interestingly, wherein they have sort of like a robot guy.
Yeah.
And he goes on like a date. And I said, oh, this is just like that episode where Data has a girlfriend called In Theory, which is a season 4 episode from Star Trek The Next Generation. But this is not, it's not a lift of best of both worlds, but it also involves that same character. It's really good. I don't want to say anything else about it other than that it is
I couldn't a get into The Orville for the same, for what he just said, for that very, for what Adam said, that very reason. But I might circle back.
I would just to see sort of, because they, all right, they go to Isaac, that's the name of the android robot character. They go to his home world and there's some stuff afoot. It's good. So that happened, and then simultaneously, there was a new episode of Discovery, which kind of did two things. One, they went to Saru's homeworld.
Yes, which I don't think it would have been as impactful if we had not had those shorts, the Star Trek shorts.
If you didn't watch the Star Trek short, definitely check it out. I think you can still grasp it, but without a problem, but for sure, I definitely think there's an additional emotional resonance that you get if you watch that particular episode of Short Trips. But they did that. It's another incredible story where you're really starting to understand the nature of his home world and what's happening there and some stuff that we'd gotten a hint of, we get a lot more of. And there's this other storyline that was happening at the same time, which is, you know, we've brought back Dr. Hugh Culber. We're getting a confirmation that, yes, in fact, this is Hugh. He has all of his memories. He's not, you know, in like some dark Hugh, you know what I mean? This is not like a mirror universe type of situation. But we're starting to delve into the fact that he's kind of, it's a traumatic event. He's been in the mycelial network this whole time. And so what we did is I reached out and I had a brief interview with Wilson Cruz, who plays that part. And there's a full interview on sci-fi.com if you want to check it out. But I'm just going to drop in a quick little segment. It's about 30 seconds where he just talks about sort of dealing with that, returning, and especially sort of Sonequa Martin-Green, who plays Michael Burnham, and how she's sort of been guiding all of the actors, and they're all following her lead, and that's part of why it's been such a great emotional journey. And you can listen to that right now.
Sonequa Martin-Green sets this high bar of work ethic and of performance that we all feel like we have to meet her there. And we're inspired by her and then by each other, and it has been the most creatively satisfying experience I've ever had. And it has forced me to use parts of my imagination and talent that have, up until this point, been untapped.
So yeah, if you like that, you can check out the rest of the interview. Go to sci-fi.com and it's there. Anyway, that's the stuff that was winning my week. And now we could talk about the news, which actually, looking at the sheet, is not really... Can't wait to talk about what won the week at the end, because a lot of the things that happen, I'm not really sure, are the most victorious pieces of news. The first being that Punisher and Jessica Jones, no mas.
Yep. And the reactions to this...
The party's over.
But the reactions to this weren't from the sublime to the ridiculous. And my thing is, like, I don't understand why people didn't notice. I'm like, they canceled everything else. Why are you... Why is this shocking to you? And then, of course, Marshall Mathers...
Marshall Mathers, yeah. Eminem
yeah. Kind of lost his mind and was like threatening Netflix and all kinds of craziness. Well,
You saw the he put the tweet where he wrote, "Dear Netflix," and then someone took a still from the music video about Stan.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, man. Here's the thing: Netflix is going to be fine.
Yeah.
Marvel is going to be fine.
Yeah,
it's okay. We're all going to be okay. There's no word on whether these things are going to come back. I would be stunned if we never see John Bernthal as the Punisher again or anything like that. I don't know how up in a show
Disney
somewhere.
Disney Streaming has
like
already
that.
Said that they're going to, I mean, not Disney Streaming. Disney has already said that they're going to keep going with Deadpool and things like that and not dumb it down or make it like more G or PG. So maybe Punisher will come back on the streaming service exactly like it is. I just think they're going to have all, I mean, you know what? I welcome it as long as this stuff is 8 episodes and 10 or not 13.
That's, you know, you know that that's where I am, but yeah. I don't think so. I mean, I don't see it. I think that it's just done. I think, you know, we're going to get Jessica Jones season 3, which, sure, they can feel free to put that out. I don't, it's not, if the other stuff wasn't doing numbers, I got to say, Jessica Jones season 3 is coming in at a deficit.
Like, even, well, so was Iron Fist, but Iron Fist fixed it, even though they were going to cancel, and now I think it's possible for Jessica Jones to fix the horrendous mess
they
that season
really, I'm
two
just
was.
Saying that they got a lot of work. Because that's it. The show came out. It did not have the best buzz. And I feel like that is the thing that the more people thought about it, the even madder they got. And I don't think it was unjustified, personally. But we got one more season and then that's it. It's kind of crazy to think that Jessica Jones season 3 is it. No more Marvel Netflix.
I also think it's weird that it's in the can and ready to go and it's canceled. Like, we haven't seen it yet. Like, all the other shows got to air and then they were canceled. But this one is like, yep, we shot it. We're rolling it out.
Why beat around the bush? You know, we all know it's coming.
I think Disney wants to drop their, when they come out with their stuff, they want to be real clear when it comes, what they're doing.
So well, I think Netflix is, you know, Umbrella Academy is a big hit by all accounts.
So, I love that show.
Do you really?
I do.
Oh, I'm so mixed on it. But people love it. It gets a long time to get there. Yeah, it's really doing well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Netflix is kind of putting their own stake in the ground. They have other deals going on for more comic related content.
Yeah, and I mean, so, and they've got all this other cool stuff that's going on. I mean, they dropped the news about Haunting of Hill House.
Yes,
season 2, and that's got a lot of people hyped up. So yeah, I mean, I'm not worried about Netflix. I think they're.
I mean,
fine.
It's the end of an era. You know,
I'm worried about being able to afford all these things, but I'm not worried about Netflix or Disney. I think like the. Years ago, it was about like being able to afford like all the extra services, which HBO and Showtime and everything. Now it's being able to afford all the a la carte services.
Right. What you're going to have is you're going to have Disney Plus and you're going to have Disney Plus Max, which is where you're going to get your adult shows like
Punisher. I believe it.
Yeah.
Okay. You said adult and Max and I thought Cinemax.
Oh, no, not that kind
and
of
thing. And I was like, what?
Is this going to
get into the Cinemax department?
Emmanuel.
They're
going to
hire David Duchovny?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Daredevil versus Emmanuel. That's really old school. You guys might not remember that. Anyway.
I'm just thinking of Mickey holding an Uzi. I'm sorry.
What?
like Kingdom Hearts style. Like, you know, angry Goofy. Weaponized Goofy.
Heaven. It's been a weird
Wait,
one.
Wait, that's what it is this week. Weaponized Goofy. That's the name of the podcast.
Whoa. All right.
When you think of the internet, it kind of is. Weaponized Goofy.
Nailed it. Anyway, so that's happening. And then Adam's favorite topic. I'm just going to leave it to you.
Can we get the root? Yeah, this is like getting the root canal out of the way so we can do the rest of the fun things that we want to talk about on this podcast. Boy, are you guys ready to have more angry debates about the Ghostbusters franchise? I sure am. I can't wait to bunker down in this particular trench in the culture war and just fight and fight and fight and yell at each other. And it's going to be amazing. Over Ghostbusters.
You know
Let me
what
say
I'm
this about
is...
Ghostbusters. Are you ready? Ghostbusters is one great movie and a children's cartoon. That is it.
That's true.
And the fact that... I'm sorry. I'm putting the cart ahead of the horse. So here's what happened,
I was
going to
say, tell everybody what happened.
Here's what happened, listeners. Jason Reitman, who is directing the upcoming new Ghostbusters movie that was teased in a little teaser that came out that had very little content but got everybody all a Twitter.
No pun intended.
Said in some interview somewhere,
the playlist.
Thank you. That he, one of the things they're doing is they're trying to give the franchise back to the fans, right? That was the direct quote.
Back to the fans.
And so everybody freaked out as they're wont to do and said, that is an insult to, what was the subtitle of the Ghostbusters movie that came out a couple years ago?
Answer the Call.
Thank you. That is an insult to Ghostbusters Answer the Call and everyone involved. And Jason Reitman is a horrible misogynist a-hole and hates everything. And of course, certain sectors of the internet celebrated that because they think that Ghostbusters Answer the Call destroyed everything they love about anything. And then Jason Reitman came out and said, that's not what I meant. And I actually just meant that we're trying to be as true to the original as possible, down to the vinyl, you know, lettering of the logo. And then Paul Feig came out and said, Jason Reitman and I are buddies, and he's always been a good friend of mine. And then we all moved on with our lives, the end. Can you tell how I feel about this?
We all moved on with our lives, the end.
Yeah.
Not me. Not this guy.
I know.
I'm still thinking about it.
Oh, good.
I'm so...
It's really, you know...
I mean, look, here's the thing. My... I don't know how Jason Reitman, man who thinks of himself as the first Ghostbusters fan. That's another quote, right? That he's, you know, he was there. It's his dad's movie.
Sure.
I've been watching since I was seven. How did he not know that saying, I'm going to give it back to the fans, was not going to read the way that it read? I mean, I'm not trying to demonize him, but I don't know how it is that he didn't in his mind think this is not going to play.
But here's my thing.
Clean.
So what if he did? What people like seem to fail to understand is all these hot takes create buzz, which is free advertising for a film that hasn't come out yet. So I honestly think whether, I mean, maybe he did do it on purpose, maybe he didn't, but the effect is still the same. If he didn't do it, somebody else would have, and it would have been the same reaction. I think it's to just like showing that piece of car in the teaser and people making all these assumptions about the movie. It's literally a teaser, just one that they're doing on social media, because good attention, bad attention, it's all attention. It doesn't upset me to the point, but I take it for face value. Like, I don't think he meant to insult anybody.
And listen, we are all adjusting, I think, on a certain level to this world where you have to think about how every single word that comes out of your mouth will sound quoted out of context on Twitter. Like, do I think that he meant that the last movie took it away from the fans and was some abomination and now they're going to bring it? No, of course not. Of course not. But, you know, that's what I'm saying. This is the world we live in now, where you can say something like that and now it's going to get splashed all over everywhere and everyone's going to make giant assumptions about who you are as a person. I think it's an adjustment for everybody that we're all, like you've said, Danny, that we as a society are not, you know, equipped to handle what social media does. And I think that this is a very clear example of that.
I certainly agree with that. I think that when there is a topic that is as big as this, or has become as big as it is, let's put it that way. Yeah, I mean, I think when you're out of a vacuum, right? Like, if you're just reading a line, right? You're reading on something on the page, or you're hearing something on a phone call rather than having the context clues of being mm-hmm. able to stare somebody mm-hmm. in the face, it does. I agree with you. That has an influence, right? Because people are very, because there are so many bad faith actors in this world. If there is one thing that social media has really revealed, this is just the volume of people like that. So I think that's why people are so quick to judge or assume or get nervous or feel like they're on shaky ground because, you know, and in this case, not to belabor the point, but, you know, it wasn't just that people didn't like Ghostbusters Answer the Call 2016. It was that Leslie Jones had her phone
oh, I know.
Hacked and that
she was
nude photos of her were leaked. You know what I mean? Like I think that's what it boils down to. And yes, it is an adjustment that we as a human society, frankly, I still believe that we still haven't even gotten used to television yet. So I don't know when the day is going to come when we're really used to social media, but it's a challenge.
An adjustment, but I just want to just point out something. It is an adjustment for certain people because there's a whole bunch of us who have had to worry about how we say things.
That's fair.
For a really long time because we will lose our jobs and things like that and lose our, that have for years, for pre-internet. So that's why I think the push and pull happens online where it's like, oh God, I got to think about everything I have to say. And you have other people that are like, yeah, so, because there's those two different viewpoints. I'm not saying they're all right, but I'm saying that there's a lot of that mixed in with, again, marketing. When we're just looking at not even individuals, when we're just looking at just at the level of companies and directors and stuff, there's some of this is, I swear, some people do this on purpose so that they can get a buzz out about their project.
It's Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, the subject, it could
I guess,
be
and it's not, it's not even, this has nothing to do with Jason Reitman or Paul Feig or anybody, but the fact that the Ghostbusters quote unquote franchise. I have a hard time even calling it a franchise.
I know.
Because not me. Because I got no problem.
Well, that's fine. That's you. You know,
I like both those first two movies. There's stuff I like about the 2016 movie. Ghostbusters. I like extreme Ghostbusters.
Okay. But the point being, Ghostbusters is where we're going to.
Is the hill we're going to die on.
Yeah. in the culture war, Ghostbusters is now a main front.
Honestly, it could be wheat bread. Just people want to fight over something.
I know.
That's true. But here's the thing.
It's driving me crazy.
I think that what Karima said about people saying a thing and maybe they didn't mean it in a negative way, but they know that it's going to create a buzz. You know what? Cue up the song.
Right.
Karima was right.
Karima was right.
I just want to find another way to use this every week.
There you go. Keep saying smart things. That's how it works.
But
anyway, that's it. Look, here's the thing. If we keep talking about it, I feel like it's going to eventually turn into three old people yelling at a cloud.
Yeah. Or I'm just going to jump out the window that we
you
don't have.
You can't jump out the window. Yes, I was going to say.
None of us like the thing. The in the immortal words of my friend Lindsay Ellis, thanks. I hate it. So,
and we're not going to die on the hill of Ghostbusters like the rest of you.
It's not. Well, there's plenty of people that aren't.
Here's the thing.
No, I mean, in this room.
If the movie comes out and Adolf Hitler is the hero, the ghost of Adolf Hitler, I'll speak out against it. Until I know more about what's actually happening, I'm not going to take Jason Reitman's one little statement and turn that into like something that we need to fight about for 3 days. Like, it's just crazy to me. Anyway, sorry, moving on.
I completely agree.
Did you guys see that Twilight Zone trailer?
Yes.
Everything you said would come true, it has.
I changed something. Erased something.
We're not meant to be here.
Life sometimes goes like you don't expect it to.
Speaking of things that are not bad.
How good did that make you feel?
Very good.
Really good, but it actually kind of like, it blew my mind a little bit because the trailer made it feel like all of the stories are going to be connected.
Yeah.
As opposed to the traditional Twilight Zone where they're all standalone things.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not against that.
I don't know how I feel about that, but I mean, I also genuinely didn't expect, and maybe this makes me a fool, but when they started dropping all of that iconography, that when you see the like that little doll of the gremlin on the wing, when you see the little machine that gives the fortunes from the restaurant,
kid on the tricycle,
I am gonna go with whatever Jordan Peele. He's got me afraid of teacups and silverware, so I now.
Yeah,
trust him to make and five on it. I can't listen to that song anymore. I trust him with wherever he's going with this. I trust him.
It's going to be really, really interesting because, you know, the Twilight Zone is the original, the OG, right, of these horror anthology shows. But now there's so much of this stuff out there. I mean, Hill House, they said, is going to be when it comes back, is going to be an anthology type deal. So, you know,
and we already have American Horror Story.
Is there going to be a unique, I hate to say unique enough because that's a grammatical faux pas, but is there a distinctive enough hole for the Twilight Zone in this modern landscape that will make it stand out above, you know, Electric Dreams and
Altered
Carbon and Black Mirror, especially?
My perspective on it is as simple as it's called Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
If it's good, people are going to come to it.
That's
true. If it really has, like, if that first episode or however many they drop in April, if that first one you see is absolutely a mind trip, people are going to come.
Yeah.
Wasn't Twilight Zone, and forgive me, I'm just trying to think back, but I really feel like Twilight Zone was really, they did cover body horror a little bit, but I felt like it was really more psychological horror and statements.
No,
on,
there
like,
wasn't
society.
Really. I mean, this was the, there
it
wasn't really body
anything.
Horror
it was,
for the most part because it was the, you couldn't put that on television back then. So, I mean, there were certain makeup effects like
the beauty.
But that, I mean,
that's one of my favorite creepy episodes.
That's
anything.
All I'm thinking of when I say body horror.
Okay.
But like, or the William Shatner alien gremlin on the wing of the plane.
What's your favorite Twilight Zone episode? Do you have one?
Oh man, jeez. You know, my initial reaction is to say Time Enough at Last, but that's not necessarily, it's just the first one that jumps out. I can't remember the name of it, but there was one where a guy, this is terrible, I'm just going to describe, a guy runs into this street vendor who sells him something, sells him some random tchotchke that he doesn't want. That thing then saves his life. You know, it's like he sells him. He's like, take this pair of scissors. And he's like, oh, I don't want this pair of scissors. And he's like, no, take it. The guy gets in an elevator and his tie gets caught in the elevator door. And so he's able to cut himself free, you know, and then he keeps buying things from this guy. And every time he does, they benefit him or save his life in some way. And then he tries to exploit it. And of course, that turns about and destroys him. So that one's great. Eye of the Beholder is also great. That's a Stone classic and deservedly so. God, there's so many good ones. I don't know. What's yours?
My favorite episode is one, I feel bad that I don't remember the name of it now, but I don't know if it's my favorite, but it's the one that stayed with me. It creeped me out so bad as a kid. And it is the one where the old man, he's dying. He's going to leave his fortune to his family, but his family sucks. They're all bad in different ways. So he brings them all over and makes them wear these masks. And he's got a mask that's like a death mask. Looks like a skeleton. And all of the other masks are, you know, these bloated, ugly, creepy looking things. And all these people are vain and in love with money and in love with themselves and really are kind of sneering at the rest of the world. And you just kind of learn how terrible they are and how much they all hate each other and are just not very nice people. And at the end, the old man dies and he becomes his mask. And then they go, finally, we could take these masks off and their faces of all. You're talking about body horror.
Oh, God, that's
all
terrible.
Their faces change.
Yeah.
And now they look exactly like the masks that they were wearing. So they've got all this money, but they're all absolutely horrific looking. It was so unsettling as a very vain small child. It really freaked me out. And it still does. There's just something about that really crawled all the way under my skin. What about you, Karima?
I liked a lot, too. It's like a lot. It's weird because I watched a lot of them with my dad, and my dad's no longer with me. So some of these I like because I remember watching them with my dad. Not necessarily that they were the most amazing. I think the one that sticks out for me is A Stop at Willoughby. And that's the guy that takes the train. And he seems to be the only person that hears about this stop. And every time he gets off at the stop, it's this amazing, wonderful place, almost like Nirvana. And then it dawns on him. It's really funny because there was I think it was Electric Dreams did something similar. I don't know if I'm mixing it up with one of the other shows that had come out. But in the end, it's a metaphor for death. He's dying. And that when he decides to get off the train and stay there, he's gone. But you don't realize any of it. You don't see the man on the deathbed or anything. Ron Serling basically explains it.
And that's what I the other one that I just had to pull up the title of because I couldn't remember it is called The Passerby, which is about the Civil War, basically. And it's this woman who lives in a house and she's seeing all these soldiers walking by on the road and one of them stops and talks to her. And it turns out that they're all dead.
They're all gone.
The road is the road to heaven or wherever the end result is. And the last person you see is Abraham Lincoln. And, you know, that's actually one thing I do want to say about the new Twilight Zone. And it goes along with what Karima said, too, is that I hope that they do that as well. I mean, Twilight Zone could be scary and freaky, but it could also be really melancholy. It could be really emotional.
Yeah.
And I wanted to have that episode that's, you remember the one with the teacher?
Yes.
And all the students who have gone off to war and had different experiences who died come and visit him because he feels as though maybe he's had no impact.
Right.
They sort of explain to him all the things that he did right. I think that type of stuff that's really life-affirming?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to make sure that the Twilight Zone's got a little... I hope that they'll have room for that, too, because I think that that's as valuable as anything else, for sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, Twilight Zone, that feels good. We've got a movie that came out now and a movie that came out a year ago that we're going to talk about. But first, let's take just a brief pause for this.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that pause was...
What a great pause.
Dope.
I'm refreshed. Yeah.
Feeling so good. It definitely wasn't just a second for us. But hey, do y'all see How to Train Your Dragon?
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel at this point I have learned how to train my dragon.
Well, it's a good thing because it doesn't seem like there's going to be any more.
That's right.
Toothless has a girlfriend.
I've hunted every Night Fury except yours. Hand him over.
I will never give him up.
Then I will destroy everything you love.
Also, I'm convinced that Toothless is my cat. and if I ever see him sitting on a windowsill because he's all black, looking at a white cat that looks exactly like him, I'm going to have to just open that window and let them talk because they're going to be a couple.
The Hidden World.
Yeah.
How to Train Your Dragon. The Hidden World.
How did you guys feel about this franchise previous to seeing the third movie? Did y'all have any attachment to it?
I really liked the first one, and it kind of took me by surprise. I was expecting to be like, oh, this is a fun little animated film, and it really got me. I think Toothless is a great animated creation. I think a lot of people fell in love with that character, and I might count myself among that number. The second one, I was kind of a little hit and miss on. I wouldn't consider myself a How to Train Your Dragon super fan, but I was certainly curious as to how they were going to wrap it up and invested on that level.
I wasn't as invested as some of the fans out there. There's a huge fan base for this. But I feel a little bit like, Adam, I think we talked about Star Wars like this once. There are so many shows and things that an animated series and characters that were actually developed much better on the smaller screen that I think I liked that better than I liked the second movie. Kind of the same way like with Rebels and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
On the whole, well, from a technical standpoint, looking at the first movie and looking at this movie, it's like... Huge. I mean, gorgeous.
Oh yeah, I was thinking about
movie,
that a lot.
Yeah,
that, just the quality of what these characters look like. The models are really, really cool.
The first movie kind of feels like he should have had a keyblade along with that dragon. It feels very early video game. But anyway, I think that the animation in this one is amazing. The design of it is absolutely stunning and. I did recently rewatch the movies and I still feel the same way. I agree, Adam. The second movie is the weakest. I don't want to say I would say the first movie and the third act of this movie are the strongest.
Interesting.
The middle, I kind of was like, okay, let's get through this, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
I also like the first one. The second one I tried to watch and fell asleep. But by goodness, we were watching this third one for work. So.
Yeah.
Well, I did the same thing. I like watching on a Coast to Coast flight or something, and I woke up, I think, when his dad died or something.
Yeah.
Okay, that happened. And I didn't feel like I'd missed anything.
Right.
So the third movie is a real 2019 mood, I have to say, in my opinion.
Well, no dialogue, I agree.
But not even just that. So I don't think this is sort of the, I don't want to say the point of the movie, but... There's definitely an undercurrent of this thing, which is humans don't really deserve dragons. And that is just, to me, the 2019-iest of moods that we haven't earned dragons.
Yeah, there's a major spoiler involved with
that as a concept, but that is certainly a question that comes up, right?
Right.
Is whether or not we really, there are some... human beings who are willing to care for them.
The mother says that in two, though.
Yeah.
That part is not spoiled because that's one of the reasons why his mother left. Mm-hmm. She left her own child because she's like, which I still thought was weird, because she felt we are not supposed to have these magical beasts. They are supposed to do what they do. And one of the things that was explored very well in this, not spoiling it, was the fact that when the whole concept of the hidden world and them being amongst themselves, their actual true powers are activated. Like, if I felt like every time we saw Toothless, it was like, this isn't even my final form. Like, every time he came back on screen, I'm like, can you just please do whatever the Light Fury is doing and then we'll get through this? But it was like, the whole concept, yes, I got that feeling that instead of How to Train Your Dragon, it's like, we shouldn't have trained any
of
these dragons.
How to Train Your Humans.
Yes.
That's what it should have been called.
Yeah.
To be better people. I will say one of the things I really, really enjoyed about this movie is that I just thinking back to, it made me think of WALL-E.
Mm. Oh, word. I had the same thought.
With the romance. I mean, they've set it up in the trailer, so it's not a big deal to say this. You know, there's romance between Toothless and the Light Fury, which is this new female dragon of his species. And the courtship between those two is far and away the best part of the film.
It is adorable.
A lot of it is wordless, you know, which again puts me in mind of Eve and WALL-E. You know, there's that pas de deux they do in space when WALL-E's got the fire extinguisher and they're flying around. And there's a similar sequence to that a little bit with Toothless and the Light Fury. That is, it's just gorgeous. It's the animation is beautiful. The atmospheric effects that are going on are fantastic. And it's really got a lot of heart. And you're rooting for these two kids to get together. You know, it was very touching. So that to me is the core of the film and well worth a watch.
And I also feel like I feel like the other two movies were more growth of Hiccup, but this I felt was a lot of growth of Toothless. Like by the end of the movie, he's a completely different dragon.
Yeah.
He's a completely different dragon.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. Yeah. There's a sequence that you said WALL-E and I thought Define Dancing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There is a sequence that's got a little bit of that on it, which I like. If the movie has a weakness, it's like a Marvel movie.
Yep.
It's that the villain just.
Yes.
Yeah. We're all in agreement. And the fun.
I'm sorry, F. Murray Abraham.
I was going to say it's such a shame because he's
a good actor.
Amazing.
But yeah, there's just not really a lot to give this guy. He's just mean. That's it.
We're talking about Grimmel the Grizzly.
Yeah.
The weird thing is, and I this isn't a testament to how I really stopped caring what he was thinking, was because I started looking at how good his animation was. Just literally physically looking at the character talking as opposed to listening to what he was saying. Because at one point, he just got off on this tangent. I'm like, is he still talking about dragons? What's happening right now? Like,
yeah, he's just sitting there going, who hurt you? You know what? I don't care.
Right.
Yeah. Could you, man, here's a question. Does How to Train Your Dragons, that world, they have therapists? Go there. Go
it
to therapy,
appear,
man.
It doesn't appear that they do. The Viking's needs, not big on therapy.
He clearly needs therapy. Just go to a therapist, man. Like once a week, if you want to have group therapy on top, go for it. I say go for that. But otherwise, yeah, like this whole journey that he's going on is just...
Well, and I think...
Go to a therapist.
It's sad because we didn't get... and if we did, I'm sorry. It was one line and I missed it. But like there were other people in other parts of the How to Train Your Dragon universe who were against dragons because something very horrible happened to them. If he said it, I missed it because it just seemed like he just played one note.
Yeah, his thing was purely philosophical. It was just like dragons are bad and they're the cause of all our problems. And the moment you let them into society,
everything is horrible.
Also, a very 2019 mood, if we're being honest. But, you know, it's still
you let them in, they'll destroy everything. Yeah. It's like, hey.
Yeah, he reminded me of Rasputin in that weird Anastasia animated movie. That's what he was giving me the vibes of. So if you like that, maybe you'll like this. But yeah.
I will say one other thing that I really liked about this movie that it didn't occur to me until I sat down and thought about it later is that Hiccup, and this, you know, one of my favorite things about The Last Jedi is this idea of failure and how failure is a teacher. And Hiccup fails a lot in this movie, not for lack of trying, not because he doesn't have the best intentions, not because he doesn't make a good plan or it's stupid. It's just, you know, sometimes even when you try your best and make what you think are smart moves, you fail. And you have to pick yourself back up and get back out there. And I think this movie has that message, which I think is very good for kids who are going to see it. So I'm always a failure of a fan.
You're always a failure, Adam.
I'm a fan of failure and the fact of people being shown that that's not the end state. You know, that you can have the best of intentions. You can try your hardest and still fail. And that's okay. And then you just have to try again and try in a different way until you find the right answer. I think that...
And that was a good... Because it is a good kids movie at the end of the day. It's an excellent lesson.
Yeah.
The other thing that I liked in this movie, kind of along with that, was like in the second movie, Astrid just pissed me off. I'm like, girl, this is why everything's going wrong because of you. In this third movie, it's sort of like they're working together was a little bit like her patience, but also her like, come on, we have to get this done. And also her leadership. I felt like she finally, that character, I think, isn't it America Ferrera?
Yeah.
I think.
Yes.
that character finally had some agency. It was, even though everybody else was like, you got to get married, you got to get married. That wasn't on the top of their minds. They were right. Like, you know, let's save us first. Us meaning the community first. I honestly think it is a spectacle. And if you're going with kids, half the stuff that we're complaining about, they are not going to get.
Right. No, sure. Totally.
It's
totally.
Just, you will definitely have a head scratching moment during one, what do you want to call it? Soliloquy that the, that the baddie that gives.
Grimmel.
Yeah. They just had one moment where I'm like, what? Why?
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. So let's, if we're going to take it from the kid perspective a little bit, mm-hmm. As adults, we can spoil the movie.
Sure.
So the end is not where I thought that movie was going to end.
Really?
No.
Really?
No. The where they go forward in time.
Yes.
And they're married and they've got kids of their own. And that really surprised me. That's not where I thought that movie was going to.
Really?
Well, no, I'm not. And to be completely, if I have to put on my critical reviewer eye a little bit, I kind of didn't like that ending.
Mm.
Because you set up these stakes of, you know, Hiccup has to learn to let go and let Toothless go be his own person. And
his own dragon.
And say, yes, exactly.
Wow.
And say goodbye, you know, and for the good of everybody. And then you're like, okay, wow, that's really impactful and beautiful. And, you know, they have this great parting. And at the end, it's like, except they can go visit each other anytime they want and hang out.
No,
you
but,
know,
they, like, but they didn't, though. That was the part that I thought was fantastic. He hadn't seen him.
I know.
And Toothless didn't recognize him at first.
No, which I
And I thought that was like, I was like, ooh, if he bites this kid's leg off.
That would have been quite an ending.
Yeah.
But what an ending
I,
that would
I was
been.
Fascinated. I didn't like it until Toothless didn't recognize them. Mm. And then I was like, okay, they haven't been going and visiting all this time.
And it's a very happy ending. And like, there's a part of me that embraces that, obviously. But mm-hmm. it's like the play Wicked. Major spoilers for anyone who's not seen the musical Wicked. And in the book that it's based on, and obviously in The Wizard of Oz, you know, the witch dies. She gets doused with water and melts, and that's the end. And in the play Wicked, on Broadway, because it's this big Broadway spectacle that's for families, there's, oh, surprise, it was a trick, and she's fine, and they live happily ever after. And it's just like, no, the emotional stakes were there, and then you took them away. And I guess that I feel like the ending of this movie does that a little bit. Again, it's a kids' movie, so it's not going to be a tragedy, but I feel like there were kids' movies that can have that kind of thing and be like, you know what? Sometimes you do have to say goodbye.
Wait,
and it's
are we talking
okay.
about Disney? Disney yeah. kills parents yeah. and siblings constantly.
Exactly. So I don't know.
Kill everybody.
It wasn't the end of the world, and it's not like it really made me dislike the film. And again, for kids, I think they will love that reunion scene at the end. And there was a part of me that really loved it too. But when the big emotional stakes get undercut, it always gives me a little twitch.
Yeah, the only thing I want at this point, and I will be looking at this for this at the next con, is one of the kids.
The baby dragons.
The baby, yeah, the baby, but the panda looking one.
Yeah.
I want that one.
Yeah.
So if you guys see that, please let me know.
They're cute as hell.
They are adorable.
I'll keep a lookout for myself.
Oh, man.
Anyway, yeah, it's fine. Yeah, I do think, though, that the end of the movie is basically humanity is not good enough for dragons. Dragons have to go live in their own world because humanity is so bad. And these people know that the dragon still exists. But if we're meant to believe that this is our world, then we have never seen dragons since because humanity still.
Yeah,
has,
I mean, he flat
not
out says
earned dragons.
He says they'll come back when we've earned or something like that, when we're good enough for them or something. And so.
And I suppose if you had the right kid, they're going to be, you know, that kid's going to go, maybe there's a dragon out there for me.
Right.
I'll find it. I'll be good enough. Something to strive for. But yeah, in the year of our Lord 2019, I looked at it and said, "This film is a mood."
And then you
that
can
we
say,
are not good enough
then
for
you
dragons.
Can say, you can say to your kid, "Well, there's a reason you don't have a dragon yet."
Oh yeah,
oh,
that's
no.
right.
Oh.
You can use that. You can hold that over their head.
Pick up the toys
that's
off
right.
the floor. Make
yeah.
your bed. Stop taking my tablet. Thank you.
And
maybe
still
a
no,
dragon
and
will show up.
Still no dragon. Yeah, no.
That's it. This is
it
like
it means you're still bad.
This is way better than a Santa Claus joint. I'll tell you because it's non-denominational. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like
God.
You're getting everybody on that joint. Anyway, all right. So those are our very mature adult thoughts on How to Train Your Dragon Part 3. Now we're gonna talk about Black Panther because it's been a year.
I never yielded, and as you can see, I am not dead.
And what a year it's been.
It has been a year since Black Panther came out. And it's, I think it's kind of had a pretty big impact. Its existence, the response to it, sort of the way that movies are, the way the world is. I mean, I think that, I mean, has it? I guess that's the question, right? Because Lord knows this has probably been the worst Black History Month in memory. So maybe I'm picking the wrong
I
wanna time
do-over.
To say it.
I want
to
do over, but in terms of the movie,
the question,
yes.
Yeah.
But and we're also talking about a year ago. Well, actually, and it's funny because I got to go to the premiere and I was and remember having to sit on this movie and not say anything about it for a whole month because I saw it in January. And I just knew how much it was going to change. And I think the phenomenon of it and the fact that, remember how we were looking at Avengers Infinity War coming out and going, Black Panther is actually still in theaters and this movie's coming out. Like, no one, I don't think anybody predicted the longevity of it. I don't think anybody could have predicted that. That phenomenon is what was interesting. Not just the box office success, just beyond the fact that it was Marvel's first quote unquote black movie. Because it wasn't just black people that saw this movie. I keep telling people.
What movie?
Exactly, Black Panther.
No,
so it's just, but the conversations that it made and the conversations, and I, you guys have both heard me say it before and I'll say it again. To the people who keep saying, oh, I'm so sick of talking about it. It's like, if there was more, we wouldn't have to talk so much about the one. So I think that the thing that for me that's come out of it was the conversations about not just diversity and inclusion, but for me, seeing something that I had seen growing up since I was a kid, being able to see that out in mainstream, which is the intersectionality and diversity of black people within the culture.
Right.
Like, that was one thing. I got a chance to talk to Danai Gurira about this last year, and she was saying, like, Danai Gurira, she was born in Iowa, but she was raised in Zimbabwe. Lupita Nyong'o is Mexican-Kenyan. John Connie is from, and his son, John Connie played T'Chaka, and his actual biological son is in the movie as his younger self. They're from South Africa, but they're Zulu. And Sterling K. Brown, Chadwick, they're from here, but Letitia Wright is Guyanese. So it's like, when people are saying, oh, it's not diverse, it's like, yes, it is.
Right.
But this is a diversity that's never acknowledged, sort of. And it was just, that was one thing that was fascinating. And also having a conversation about Killmonger's conversation and basically T'Challa's conversation is something that has been talked about in the black community for years. But the fact that the first time I actually saw it played out almost metaphorically on screen was in a superhero movie kind of blew me away. And I think that's those are the discussions that were behind the scenes and actually propelling things forward, even outside of like the awards and stuff like that. Like, I think it's fantastic that it's up for all these Oscars and it should get them. But what resonated with me was all of the discussions behind the scenes and conversations. I've done so many podcasts where people are like, I didn't know that, fill in the blank. It's like, let's discuss this. And everyone, black, white, Asian, Latino, like it's been an amazing way to discuss the concept, not just give lip service to diversity. And I think for that, for me, is my takeaway.
I mean, that's the thing about it. I think that it really, what it could have been just a straightforward superhero movie and done well and done the job of, okay, we're, you know, putting forth a black superhero or putting forth the whole cast of black characters and been fine.
Yeah.
You know, like the example I think of is Doctor Strange.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Doctor Strange as a film. I'm not in any way pooping on it, but it's a pretty straightforward story, you know, it and that adheres to some of the basic formulaic tenets of the Marvel origin movies that we've had. And Black Panther could have done that and made an impact, probably made a lot of money and been fine. But the fact that it does contain everything you're talking about and kind of elevates the form a little bit, I think, is what made it so special and what made it resonate for as long as it has. You know, there's a reason that it's the first Marvel film nominated for an Oscar, because if had it not contained those ideas, or for a Best Picture Oscar, I should say, had it not contained those ideas and that discussion and those dialogue and that very important line that, you know, there was a story this week about how Ryan Coogler was 99% sure that Killmonger's line about wanting to be buried at sea next to his ancestors who knew that death was better than life in bondage was going to get cut. And that Kevin Feige was like, nope, that's the line that sold me on the script, you know? So I think that stuff like that is what makes it the special moment in the history, the arc of cinematic superhero stories that it is.
And it was executed well.
Yeah.
They even though they didn't just rest on their laurels and just give us enough, they didn't go overboard and try and do too much. This is one of the things I was saying about Alita. Like, had Alita stayed within the first three mangas, I think everybody would have loved it. They tried to just overreach and tell five stories in three. This wasn't. The story was very simple, but executed so brilliantly. And yeah, I honestly think, and there's a lot of people who to this day who are like, I don't see the big deal. It's just, it's not that big of a movie. It's like, okay, that's fine. It's not for you.
But here, can I ask you this question?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, ye who is going to represent black people this day.
Right, today. That's
so
my job.
When I was at San Diego Comic-Con, they asked me to go talk to Orlando Jones. Now, Orlando Jones is a very different perspective on Black Panther,
mm-hmm.
which was, I've seen these moments before.
Yep.
And they didn't mean right. shit to my dad or my granddad. Like, these things did not actually improve anything for them. So I don't believe that it's going to improve anything for me. So my question to you, quite bluntly, is in the last year, you get more work?
During Black History Month.
But no, I will say, for real. Like,
I will say, and I also, actually, I want to separate this out because me getting more work and putting that up against the success of Black Panther are, right. are two different things. I will say, yes, I have actually had more conversations that have led to work. I will definitely say that. Do we have a long way to go? Absolutely.
Yeah.
What I think this movie is going to do, and I also said this, actually, I got to say this to Ryan, actually, when I got a chance to meet him. Had I seen this movie when I was 12, I wouldn't be in here with you guys. I'd be at NASA right now. I'd be a completely different person. This movie is as much as I adore it, it has changed the life of a 10 or 11-year-old that saw Shuri. You know what I mean? I don't think, I'm not saying I'm like, it's not for my age group.
Sure, you saw that video with Ryan Coogler and the little girl mm-hmm. comes in. You know, her family came in to introduce her and she's dressed like Shuri.
Yep.
And they were talking about, you know, that's the, and you know, we're talking about it a year from now. But yeah, I mean, Black
and
Panther
I've been
in
to
10,
events.
20 years.
I took a picture with a young, a little white girl who was dressed as Shuri at New York Comic Con. And her father was like, everything we do now is science. Everything. Like, Shuri has changed this child's life. So that's what I'm saying. I think in terms of what the movie, in terms of the population, I think younger people, kids, it was amazing. In terms of the actual film industry, what I have seen is I actually physically now know people who were inducted into the Academy and that are actually now voting for Oscars and things like that. I don't think it was just Black Panther. I think it was a tipping point of Black Panther, Oscar So White, and a bunch of other movements that were already happening. And things, you can say pop culture, political, etc. But it's part of this, when we look back at 2018, that is going to be one of the movements. I don't think on the micro level that I'm going to get more work because of Black Panther, but I will say that I can actually have a conversation and make a reference from that movie now, with someone who might be nervous about talking about race, diversity, you know, immigration, anything like that. I have used that as a, hey, remember in the movie when this happened, to break the ice on an otherwise basically uncomfortable topic. So I don't think it's going to help my wallet. And I know what Orlando was talking about because I think everybody said this back with Do the Right Thing oh, goodness. What was John Singleton's movie?
Boys in the Hood.
That. Thank you. Yeah. Oh, you know, Black Hollywood is here and all these movies are going to, you know, and now the doors are going to open. No, but I do think that the internet wasn't there then. So we're going to see, and there's more access to arts, artisans. I don't think anybody knew anything about, I can tell you half of the stuff that Ruth Gardner did, who's the costume designer, Hannah Beekler, who was the production corner, even if I didn't have to, it wasn't working here, I could literally look it up on the web and get all this information. So I think in terms of behind the scenes, it has made a difference, a huge one, nope, but a difference nonetheless.
Well, and that's the thing, I think you just can't think of it as an end point.
No.
You know,
it's a beginning.
It's the same thing as people saying, well, we elected Barack Obama, so racism no longer exists in America. Yeah. It's like, no, it's an important step that we elected him? Yeah, of course, you know, for racial relations, I guess, in this country, but is it the end? And is there work left to do? Of course. And so I think that it's the same thing with Black Panther. Like, you can say both of those things. I think it was a really important moment.
Huge.
But it is not, it's not the end of the conversation. It's not the end of the work.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I also think that that's one of the problems that Hollywood does have, is that there can, I've said it before, the Highlander syndrome, there can be only one. And it's proven that no, there needs to be another movie. And honestly, quickly, because the people who, I know people who had never gone to a superhero movie before that went to Black Panther, that showed out in droves for Infinity War and lost it when T'Challa got caught up in the snapture. So they need to, the next movie needs to hurry up. I want to see Shuri in the suit though. There was a Hudlin run where she was Black Panther for a minute.
Sure.
So I want to, I just think also Letitia Wright would just be so much fun.
Agree. Yeah. I mean, I would say that that's, you know, if I'm trying to think, how have things changed in the year for me, what have I noticed? I would say, I think I'm following more people and paying a little more attention. I think that people said some things that were thoughtful that I, you know, but maybe I didn't see, like you said, the diversity within the diversity.
Yeah.
Quite to the degree that I could have been. And I think as a result of starting to see those things get retweeted into my feed, caused me to follow a lot of new people that I wasn't following before. And so in the last year, I think I probably have gotten a lot, not it's anybody's job to inform me, but, you know, by process of just following people in general, right, and listening to what they have
and
to say,
no,
that's going to transform
things. And there's no test at the
thing.
End of this.
No.
It, you know what I mean? It's just sort of like, hey, this is a thing. Did you know this was a thing? There's a whole group of people that are talking about this thing that actually was represented in this movie, you know? So,
and let's, you know, the cultural conversation is important, but I also want to say, like, it's just real. Like, I just rewatched it again in preparation.
Movie.
It's like the middle third of that movie is the best James Bond movie we've had in in a decade. Like, that whole casino sequence is amazing action. The design is phenomenal throughout this film. Like, it's just really...
Danai Gurira on that car.
It is firing on all cylinders. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was... I walked out of that thing. My sexuality is Danai Gurira in that movie from now on.
What?
Because, yeah.
That's what we're calling this. Adam's sexuality is Danai Gurira.
Yeah.
She's... No, I mean, the whole thing is incredible. So, and I think... I would love to have this conversation again in 5 years after there's three movies out or something, you know, to see what. But I don't think anybody knew that it would have the longevity or make the money it did because it was the first one. What makes me sad is I don't think the second one is going to make as much money as the first. Because it.
Well, that usually doesn't.
You know what I mean? Because the first.
Know, but it usually doesn't go that way. So
I hope it has the same impact. I hope Coogler assembles the same team.
And it depends, you know, how do you capture that lightning in a bottle again? What questions is that movie going to ask that, you know, the first one didn't about this larger cultural conversation? Because again, that's what made it so compelling, I think, for so many people, is that it did ask those questions. And now what?
I mean, it
can't just be a straightforward super. You can't make a Black Panther film that is just a straightforward action slam
bang
super movie.
I think that, again... We had a rough month, right? It was a real bad month. And I'm just saying that you can look at that and go, you know, there's a lot still yet to talk about.
Sure.
There's a lot. I mean, will it make as much money as the original? Statistically speaking, looking at most movies, second chapters often are the ones that make a little bit less. So I'm not too worried about that. I think it'll still be successful. And I think that there's never going to be a shortage of ways to interpret the real world and its struggle with race and adapt that to a Black Panther story.
I also think that there's a huge way that this could not just be another movie, but there could be, you know, series and things like that on the smaller screen, simply because when you think about it, Wakanda kind of got destroyed in this fight in Infinity War. Now, I don't know what we're going to see of Wakanda in this next movie, but they've opened their borders. Everybody knows who they are now and what vibranium can do. So that means there's going to be a constant.
That was my number one wish coming out of this movie the first time, was that they launched a World of Wakanda TV show.
Yeah.
Just because, a TV show, and it's not, you know, the main cast doesn't even have to be in it, or cast Danai Gurira and have her be the lead or whatever, and just tell stories there in a TV format. I think that would be amazing.
Well, one of the comics, even when Ta-Nehisi Coates took over, this will be the last thing I say about it, but when Ta-Nehisi Coates took over the comic, one of the things was T'Challa coming back after fighting, and Namor had done his, you know, mess in Wakanda and stuff. And basically, Wakandans were upset they're like, you're supposed to be our king and you're out there and we're getting tore up. So he had all these internal conflict. And I just thought that would be really interesting. And much of the story is Adora Milaje's story and things like that. And I think that would be fascinating. Even some of the comics that are out now, like Nnedi Okorafor's and stuff, they're out in the, not even talking to the king and his people. It's all people of Wakanda that are like, I'm trying to rebuild. And I, you know, this is eight generations of this and it's gone. And really interesting, interesting stories. And I think there could be so much on the small screen. The animated series is doing really well. So let's see if, you know, something follows suit there.
It being a year now, I think everyone should stop asking the cast to do the Wakanda salute. That's my one recommendation. Because I think
Chadwick is tired.
Did you see those pictures? Yeah. It's like the picture like, oh, like the, at the premiere where he's like, yeah. And then by 6 months later, yeah, he's like, okay.
Yeah. My arms.
So, yeah.
Seems nice enough that your kids do it. Just let your kid, ask your kid to do it.
Yeah.
Kid will do it any day. Anyway, mm-hmm, that's it. That's our show. So, of the things we talked about, what do you think is win of the week?
Oh, Black Panther.
All right. Win of the year, Adam.
Yeah. I mean, I liked How to Train Your Dragon 3. I really did. But revisiting Black Panther was just a wonderful thing. And I think that that movie deserves all the accolades it's going to get, and Oscars are coming up this weekend, so we'll see what happens.
Danny's going to vote for Ghostbusters.
Yeah, just a huge fan of Ghostbuster controversy. No, I'm giving it to the Twilight Zone trailer just because that was the thing that was new, and mm-hmm, I'm reserving, you know, maybe Black Panther's going to win an Oscar this year. We don't know.
We'll see. You guys got to come back next week.
Not only will it win my week, but it'll be winning for another whole year. So, all right. That's it. That's where we land. Tell us what won your week. Thank you for listening. If you're not subscribed, please subscribe. If you've never given a review, please give us a review. It helps a lot. And make sure you're checking out all the other wonderful Sci-Fi Wire podcasts, Strong Female Characters, Fandom Files, Battlestar Galacticast, Behind the Panel, official Deadly Class podcast, and check out all the Amazon Alexa skills that we've got going on podcast there, and Adam Swiderski slow jams you the news.
Oh, yeah.
Before we wrap up, where can people find you kids on the internet?
You can find me, Karima, the Blurred Girl, TheBlerdGurl, all over the interwebs, but mostly Twitter and Instagram.
And you can find me on Instagram at RockTheFaces.
And my name is Danny Roth. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at DannyOrdinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary also with one N. This has been Who Won the Week. Thank you for winning our week. We'll see you again next week.